Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back to News and Views. I'm Rob Schofield. Medicaid expansion is back on the table at the North Carolina General Assembly. Sort of. Maybe. House Speaker Tim Moore announced recently that he would fulfill a promise to revive the GOP version of the proposal now that the House was finished with the budget, and soon thereafter the bill was approved by the House Health Committee on a voice vote and forwarded to the House Rules Committee. Where things go from here, however, remains very much in doubt in a body in which the leadership has a reputation for placing items on the daily calendar and then just letting them sit there unaddressed for weeks on end. Earlier this week, I caught up with veteran health policy reporter Rose Hoban of NC Health News to get her take on Medicaid expansion and some other matters on the table in Raleigh. Well, Rose Hoban, welcome to News and Views. Good to have you with us.
Good to be here, Rob. Thanks for having me.
One of the big issues that continues to dominate politics and policy debates in North Carolina is Medicaid expansion. It has been around now, this idea that we could have this option in North Carolina for over 6 years. The legislature has rejected it. Now, once again, there seems to be a little bit of movement on it in the House of Representatives. Can you give us a sort of assessment of where things stand?
Well, this is the most movement it's had. Democrats have filed bills annually that have just gone nowhere because they've been in the minority. And Republicans have filed a bill. The first bill was filed a few years ago by a group of Republican House members. Mm-hmm. And that bill, Carolina Cares, you know, it got a lot of press, but it never moved. It never got a committee hearing. The bill sponsors, and it's a group of four folks who were involved in health policy. It's Donnie Lambeth from Winston-Salem, Donna White from Johnson County, Josh Dobson from out west a little bit, and then Greg Murphy, who's now moved on to Congress. So they did a lot of talking about it in the last legislative session. The bill never went anywhere. Then they filed the bill again when this legislative session began, and it really didn't go anywhere until last week. Finally, it got a committee hearing. So this is really the first time there's been any substantive legislative movement on the bill.
Right. And this is a time in which, in an ordinary year, we wouldn't even be in session, right? The legislature typically adjourns at the early July, sometime early summer.
That's true. Although you forget, in 2015, we were here until October because, once again, legislature was fighting over Medicaid. So it's one of those big ticket, big items that can sometimes gum up the works. But we're still here. We're still talking about it. And last week, the bill, it's the Healthcare for Working Families Act, actually made it out of the House committee and is now poised to be voted on the floor, on the House floor. It has not yet, though.
Tell our listeners a little bit about this bill. The sponsors of it say this isn't traditional Medicaid expansion. It's a different program. They seem to even reject that label of Medicaid expansion, but it's clear that it would have that effect and that at least several hundred thousand people would gain access to health insurance. Can you tell us a little bit about the bill and maybe what distinguishes it from so-called clean Medicaid expansion?
So you have this idea of clean Medicaid expansion, which is a state says, okay, we're just going to roll all these other people onto our Medicaid program and get paid $9 out of every 10 spent by the federal government. That's sort of a quote-unquote clean Medicaid expansion. This idea needs to be made palatable to folks across the spectrum. And one way to do that is by adding a work requirement and adding a small premium, which would be up to 2% of annual income. The sponsors say that this makes it into an alternative insurance product wherein people are essentially buying in. And so it feels more like insurance. And when I spoke to Donnie Lambeth, he said, well, you know, the people I talk to who are low-income workers, they want to pay in something, and so this is the mechanism to do it. There are some states that have done work requirements. There's a couple states that have done premiums. The thing that would make this unique among the rest of the states that have done this is this idea that there's a wellness component, so it would require people to participate in wellness activities, things like getting an annual physical, getting some of your screenings, which, I mean, it's an incentive. It's the stick. If you want this insurance, then you have to do this stuff, which is supposed to be good for you. So that's the thing that the sponsors say makes this unique and not quite Medicaid expansion.
One of the challenges, of course, that comes along with that, though, is that it requires the creation of a bigger bureaucracy to monitor all that. You got to keep track of who's paying when and which people are in and out of the workforce and who's making their appointments. And as a result, it seems that in other states, maybe where they've gone down some of these roads, a lot of people end up falling out of being eligible for the program.
Well, I mean, that happened in Arkansas. The other thing about the difference between a clean Medicaid expansion and this is that clean Medicaid expansion, you just sort of wave a wand and add all these people onto the program. This is going to require that the state and the State Department of Health and Human Services write what's called a waiver to the federal government. So a lot of that stuff could be hammered out in the waiver. We don't know, for example, like, would you be bumped off if you don't go to your wellness visit like once a year? Do you have to do it every 2 years? You know, and you're right, though, Rob, like there is the prospect of adding, and Dave Richard, who's the state Medicaid director, you know, said as much in the committee hearing last week that they're still working on what the estimate of the cost would be, but there would definitely be a cost to monitoring all these folks and monitoring, are they working? Or it could be volunteer work. There's also, if you're going to school full time, if you're engaged in caregiving for like a family member, if you're in a drug treatment program, all of those things would also create an exemption from the work requirement. But nonetheless, it would require some tracking, which I think, you know, it makes me wonder, like when folks start looking at the actual price tag of that, are people going to be like, ooh? But then again, you talk to folks who are on the Republican side of the aisle, and they really feel like the way to make this policy palatable to their constituents is to include that work requirement. So, you know, it's a dilemma for them, I think, in some senses.
Obviously, it's got a long way to go. The House has yet to take it up. And even if somehow that happens, there's this whole other body over at the General Assembly called the North Carolina Senate, where Senate Leader Phil Berger. What's your take on what his position is? It seems that he remains an opponent to the idea, though maybe he's softened a little bit.
I'm old enough to remember back in the days when, you know, of the Cold War, when people would parse the words coming out of the Kremlin, right? And they would be like, oh, this means that they're thinking this. It feels that way with Berger. I've had people say, well, he said things slightly differently this year. And it's really hard to know the mind of man, or the mind of any person. But the lead appropriations chair in the Senate, Senator Ralph Hayes, has said things to me in the past, like, no Medicaid expansion, no way, no how. He did say something, and I'm trying to remember the quote, but he seemed to soften it a wee bit the last time I talked to him about it. But again, it's that sort of parsing of language. But you're right, Rob. The bottom line is that the Senate is a completely different animal. They have a different way of approaching this. They have been really hard line for a long time. And so, you know, you can get this through the House, but will it get stopped in the Senate is a really good question. And I have no answer to that.
Well, we won't hold you to any predictions. Our time is limited, but I wanted to hit on one more point here. Y'all recently reported, as all of this rancor is going on in the legislature, NC Health News reported that North Carolina's uninsured gap, the size of the body of people that we're trying to get covered here, remains very high. I guess we're the ninth highest in the nation. Is that what the report indicated?
Yeah, and I think that's kind of like where we've been for a long time. We're up there with states like Mississippi and Nevada, Georgia. Those are other states that also have high rates of people who are uninsured. Texas leads the pack with 17% of the people in the state who are uninsured, which used to be around our rate. I mean, our rate has come down to about 10.7%, and that's because there's a lot of folks who have been able to purchase insurance on the Affordable Care Act exchanges, but we still have a fairly high rate of uninsurance. I mean, in states that have accepted Medicaid expansion, they've done a lot better. Like if you look, like Massachusetts has a 2.8% rate of uninsured. When Obamacare was still Romneycare, you know, they fully embraced this kind of universal health insurance in that state. And so that's where they are. But other states like Iowa, fewer than 5% of people are uninsured. Michigan, around the same. There really is definitely a dividing line between states that have chosen to expand Medicaid and states that haven't.
And it seems like it will remain one of the most important and one of the most hotly debated topics in our state government in the weeks and months ahead. Thank you so much for all the great coverage you provide at North Carolina Health News. That's at nchealthnews.org. Am I right about that website?
Correct. You can spell it out or you can just say nchealthnews.org.
Well, thank you again, Rose. We'll talk to you again real soon, I hope.
Thanks, Rob.
Well, that's it for this edition of News and Views. Be sure to check us out online and subscribe to our free newsletters at ncpolicywatch.com. For producer Clayton Henkel, it's Rob Schofield. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again next week.
You've been listening to News and Views. A weekly look at state and policy issues is a production of North Carolina Policy Watch. Visit them online at ncpolicywatch.com.